Good Wednesday. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live on the air and online at thegamenashville.com and that beautiful Game Nashville app. What's going on? Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth. Ryan, how are you?
What's up, Chaser?
Man, I'm feeling good today. I'm ready. We're halfway there. We will be by the time this day is over, but you know,
Hump day.
I'm ready to go, ready to rock and roll, and excited about our championship game. The one shining moment between Pecorine and Steve McNair in our Nashville sports bracket. We'll be talking about that all day long, and it's only fitting. And it really worked out. It's funny how these things always work out. You have upsets and you have exciting moments throughout tournaments, but then, you know, it always shakes out how it's supposed to. And I think with the Predators, I think we'll always look at Shea Weber, at least for right now. Roman Josi clearly making a case, but Shea Weber is probably number two to Pecorine, Eddie George number two to Steve McNair, and that's how everything kind of shook out. So I thought that was interesting, and now it'll be Steve McNair versus Pecorine. So we will discuss that coming up in just a little bit. But I did want to bring this up as we open the show. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's kind of been the face of everything, he is the top infectious disease doctor here in our country, was asked point blank about sports. And I believe the question was from Snapchat's Peter Hamsby. And it was more about the baseball plan that we've been talking about, Ryan. And he brought it up to him of, well, do you think that this is feasible? And Dr. Fauci said, there's a way of doing it, quote, nobody comes to the stadium, put the players in big hotels wherever you want to play. Keep them very well surveilled, have them tested every single week, and make sure they don't wind up infecting each other or their family, and just let them play the season out, end quote. So basically he's saying sports can come back whenever. You just got to quarantine everybody and can't have fans, which I think is what we all kind of assumed.
Yeah, and it would be a surprise if when sports return, if fans are a part of it. I think we're going to go a while without fans in attendance at these events. You know, I think we will slowly, at some point, whenever that time is, we will slowly, you know, kind of backpedal from where we slowly went into the stay-at-home order. We will slowly backpedal out of that and, you know, go back to maybe the 50 people in a restaurant at one time where, you know, that was kind of the last barrier before the stay-at-home order. You know what I'm saying? But I think we're going to slowly go that direction, whether that's in May, whether that's in June, whether that's in July. And then when sports return, I would assume that most of it will take place without fans in attendance. And fans attending sporting events might be one of the last things to return to normalcy because of the sheer number of people that involves. I mean, for NBA games, for NHL games, you're talking 15, 18, 20,000 people in one arena. For NFL games, you're talking about, you know, 60, 70, 80,000. For college football games, for some stadiums, you're talking 80, 90, 100,000 people in one stadium. So when sports do return, I would expect them without fans, but it is interesting. It is encouraging to hear Dr. Fauci say that about sports and maybe give a glimmer of hope to the not too distant future as it pertains to sports.
Yeah. And how I look at it, and I believe the vibe I'm getting from, you know, some U.S. government leaders is they know how important sports are just from an economic standpoint. I mean, we've discussed TV deals time and time again and the revenue that they bring into these leagues and stimulating the economy. So I think there are many that look at this as, okay, sports need to come back. It's going to stink not having fans there. It's going to be different for sure. You know, I mean, like the Miami Marlins, they're used to it. So, I mean, it won't really be that big of a deal for them. Uh-huh. But wow. I think, yeah, I know, I had to. But I think that they have to. I think they have to figure this out, whether it's doing the, you know, had the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League or however you want to do it, redo the divisions. I don't know. But they got to figure something out with sports. The, you know, going to North Dakota or another city for the NHL, Vegas for the NBA. We've been talking about it. That tells you that there are meetings going on, Zoom meetings or whatever. that I think everybody realizes how important it is, and I feel like something is going to happen, and I applaud them for putting forth the effort to try and make this work.
100%. And, you know, I was listening to Donald Trump yesterday. He brought up sports again and the importance of them, even if fans have to watch at home and not in person, just, you know, what that can do for our country's morale, to get sports back in some form or fashion, I think is definitely going to be an important moment within this entire pandemic.
Absolutely. So another situation that we'll continue to talk about. I mean, that's the news we have, Ryan, is are they going to come back, and what's the latest crazy plan that somebody's come up with? It's fun in some ways because you get to be creative, and as you know, I enjoy that. But at the same time, it's like, all right, I'm just ready for something. I mean, I'm a wrestling fan. I mean, I've been watching WWE, but it's different. It's weird. I'm ready to watch baseball. I'm ready for hockey to come back. I'm ready for something other than the NFL draft. You know, the NBA would be great. So I'm ready for some closure with some of this to see if it's going to work. So we will see what happens with that. So I brought up our bracket, and we're going to have Floyd Reese coming up in a few minutes. We're going to have Sean Henry coming up after that. And I think it's appropriate that both of those guys are coming on, albeit for a variety of different reasons, not just our bracket, but Steve McNair versus Pecorine. And I believe that anyone that has been here long enough, and you and I would agree with this, that those are the two faces of the their respective franchises. Agree?
Of all time, absolutely.
Yes, of all time. Steve McNair, the man, Pecorine, the man. And so it's only fitting in my mind that they are going head-to-head in our competition for the championship. And I'm very curious to see how the vote goes, because I think it's going to be close.
Well, very early on, it's been very close.
Right.
I mean, we are 97 votes in. It's 55% Steve McNair, 45% Pecorine. I would be surprised if either one of them wins by more than 60 to 65%. I think it's going to be fairly close all day long.
So my question that we're going to bring up to Floyd and to Sean, and I want to ask the listeners, I want to ask you, when was the first time that you saw either Steve McNair or Pecorine and you knew there's something special here? You thought they were special then, or you knew that they were going to be special. Do you have a good answer for that?
For Steve McNair, I would say the final drive of the Super Bowl when he led the Titans all the way downfield. It was unfortunate, heartbreaking for Titans fans that they ended up 1 yard short of potentially pushing the Super Bowl into overtime. But Steve McNair's individual plays on that drive were nothing short of special. And I think that was because when you look at Steve McNair's season in 99, when they went 13-3 and they ended up going to the Super Bowl, it's not like Steve McNair had this special season statistically. I mean, he was a very average quarterback, but when he made those plays on that final drive, I thought that was kind of one of the first times where you could sit back and watch Steve McNair and say, okay, this is the Steve McNair that we've all been waiting for. And then there were various comebacks in the years to follow, the one in Pittsburgh in 2000, the one at the Meadowlands in 2002, fourth quarter comebacks that he orchestrated, that those are the iconic moments in Steve's career that his former teammates talk about. So I would say a combination of all those moments would be my answer for Steve McNair. My answer for Pecorine, personally, I thought the Preds had something in his rookie year in the month of February. The month of February that season was when the Preds really took a charge towards the playoff hunt, and he outdueled the Bruins. I don't think Tim Thomas was in net for the Bruins in that game. I think it was Manny Fernandez. But the Bruins were like by far the best team in the league. They were incredible that season. And Pecorine on a Saturday night outdueled the Bruins, won in a shootout, and he made a ton of big saves in that game. And I remember talking to my brother at that game saying, you know, the Preds have something here. And then later that season, he shut out the Red Wings in that 8-0 game where he made one highlight reel save after another. And the rest is history. And I think Pecorine, because of the timing within their careers between McNair and Rene, he became a legend in this town maybe a little later than Steve did, because Steve took the Titans to the Super Bowl in the first year that the Titans were the Titans, and then Pecorine, about 7 or 8 years into his career, took the Preds to the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, I think you've named very good examples for both. Mine with McNair, besides the Super Bowl, because everybody's going to look at it, I remember it vividly, and I was 12 years old, of watching him scramble out of being sacked multiple times on that last drive and getting them to within a position to score. So I think that that's always going to stand out for a lot of people. But then it was the when he was hurt with the spleen, and he comes in and wins the game. I mean, the guy always played hurt in the 16 straight weeks of being listed as questionable and in actually being questionable. I mean, not practicing, and just the overall toughness that you just don't see anymore. I've heard Floyd and Jeff Fisher describe it as country strong, and that's exactly what he was, and you saw that. And so that's kind of when I knew. Pecorine for me is when he got the job and then helped them win a playoff series. I mean, I was there against the Ducks, and just that's when I started to see it, that the team was rallying around him. There was, you know, it wasn't anything disrespectful to whoever was playing behind him, whether it was with Dan Ellis or, you know, Mace later on or anyone else, that it just, there was something different when 35 was in net. And the rest of the team, they knew that he was in charge. They looked at him as, okay, we're going to do this for you. I mean, you are our leader, even though Shea Weber's wearing a C or Mike Fisher or Roman Josi. There was just something how he commanded that team without even, and we all know Pecorine, like he doesn't walk in a room and go, I'm in charge. That's not him at all. It's just how he carries himself. And I saw that, you know, really against the Ducks and then the following year against Detroit. That's to me when it was like, that is the guy.
I think you could even say the second round series against Vancouver in 2011. There was a performance in Vancouver in overtime where he made saves that even Pecorine today can't make. I mean, he made some unreal highlight reel saves just to keep the Preds in some of those games against Vancouver.
We will ask Sean Henry his thoughts on Pecorine, but when we come back, Floyd Reese, our own GM, you can hear him 2 to 6 weekdays on Jared and the GM. He will join us next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Game Nashville is your NFL draft home for the much-anticipated event starting on Thursday, April 23rd. Tune in to ESPN 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 for all of our coverage presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth hanging out, and we say hello to the GM, Floyd Reese, 2 to 6 weekdays alongside Jared Stillman. Floyd, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys this morning?
Man, I'm doing well. It's good to talk to you because it's been a while. I've obviously gotten to listen to you, but we haven't gotten to have a conversation in quite some time because we're all working from home.
It's amazing how, you know, you see somebody every day for years and then all of a sudden you don't see them for, you know, 6 weeks or something.
I know. It's crazy. It's just crazy. But there has been a lot going on in the NFL. Obviously, the draft coming up, as I was just saying a few moments ago. But when you were in the GM chair and you knew that you were in a negotiation with one of your players, and then somebody, I'll use Christian McCaffrey as an example, gets a big payday, albeit plays a different type of style than Derrick Henry. How did you feel as the GM knowing that, okay, this is probably going to come up when I'm talking to his agent?
Well, you knew it was going to come up. I mean, they were kind of obligated to do that. By the same token, I think I realized, and hopefully the agent was experienced enough that he realized that, you know, you're talking about two different guys here. You know, they both play running back, you know, RB. That's about the only similarity. And it's not unusual. I mean, you see this in some other positions, too. We see all the time where, a defensive tackle, for example, Aaron Donald, who, you know, can lead the league in sacks or whatever he's done. I mean, just be a giant force. And then other guys can sit in there and play the position well and, you know, finish the season with two sacks. and you'll hear coaches talk about how well they've played. So it's not unusual, and I think the key would be, you know, to get the point across that I think my deal is fair, if they do, and I'm sure they do, and that, you know, the McCafferty deal really isn't going to influence me. Now, if that would have been Ingram, or it would have been, you know, another Henry style back, then I think, you know, they would have had some ammo to use. But because we're talking about two totally different guys, it really wouldn't affect me much.
Floyd, with this, they have time. They have until July 15th to get a long-term deal done, because Henry has signed the franchise tender, so he would definitely play under that if they don't get something done. We know that there are other areas that the Titans still need to address, whether it's free agency with Clowney or Logan Ryan or the draft itself. So if you're in John's position right now, Are you worried about Henry at all, or are you still just going down your checklist trying to get everything else done?
Yeah, I mean, I would be worried from the standpoint that you want to get a deal done. I think you don't have much of a concern because you know it doesn't have to get done until July. Now, you know, it's always sooner the better, but because you knew you know you do have some time, it's not one of the pressing needs like, you know, getting ready for the draft or deciding what some of these other players that you might or might not have interest in, what they're going to do and how that affects your draft. I mean, I think right now, you know, there's a couple of spots just to use the two names you used, you know, which is Clowney and Logan, and you're saying, okay, you know, there's two spots that if I were to get one or both of those guys, if I wanted them both, then, you know, I would literally check that off my checklist. If I don't get, you know, Logan, for example, all of a sudden corner skyrockets to the top of my list.
GM Floyd Reese here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is the Rundown. Floyd, when you're in the GM chair, how difficult can it be to... Or let me say it like this. How hard is it to look at a franchise player like a Derrick Henry, or in the case of Carolina, like Christian McCaffrey, where a lot of people will come out and say you shouldn't pay a running back, and the fact that all these running back deals, you know, blow up in GM's faces. How difficult is it for a GM to think that way when you see how valuable that individual is on a Sunday to Sunday basis for that team?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because we all know that virtually our running game and what we do is paramount to everything else. And really, I would venture to say the success of the team across the board. And that's why, you know, we've talked about, like, for example, in this draft, in my opinion, I mean, we need to come out of this draft with a backup running back. And I really don't care where we get them, because it's got to be somebody of quality, simply because, God forbid, if something were to happen to Derek, I mean, you know, you want to cancel the season? We're done. We're going home. You know, you got to still play. And who's going to, you know, I mean, we don't really have a legitimate backup for him. And so I think that position is important, but it's difficult. You know, I mean, you understand what it all means, and you understand what he means, and you know, you don't want to disrespect them at all. And yet, as you said, I mean, the bottom line is we didn't create the franchise number. We didn't create the attitude towards running backs. We didn't create, you know, what has been a little bit of history here, but it is there. And you have to, you know, you have to be rational enough to say, okay, I see it. I understand. Now, they're different. You know, obviously Carolina feels that McCaffrey is different. And let's face it. I mean, if you name anybody on Carolina's team, you know, what's the number one name out of every single person's mouth? It's going to be McCaffrey. And I think when you talk about us, you'd say, okay, who's the best player on the team? Well, you're going to get a bunch of Henrys, and you're going to get a bunch of Tannehills, and you may get a bunch of Taylors, I don't know, you know, any other name. So there are a couple of options. But at Carolina, I mean, he's the guy, and you know he's the guy.
When it's draft night and you've got all the scouts in one room, and, you know, next week it's not going to be like that with the NFL draft being virtual. But in the case of Mel Kiper's mock draft, where Kiper has Miami taking Justin Herbert over Tua at number 5 overall, what can those debates be like inside the war room, where I'm sure that debate is going on in Miami of, do we take Tua or do we take Herbert at 5th overall? How intense can that get?
You know, the discussions will get intense, but they probably got intense a month ago. You know, that all of these kinds of decisions, especially for guys in that area of the draft, have already been made. You know, they know that, hey, if this guy is there, that's the guy we're going to take. If we have a choice, this is the guy we're going to take. Are we going to be willing to take the other guy if the first guy is gone? Then that's, you know, that's another question. But I think anybody in that position has already decided, okay, I would be willing to do it or I wouldn't, and what are my alternatives? Okay, I've got to trade out. All right, who have I talked to about a trade? Yeah, I've got to see if we can convince somebody to move up and take my spot. Well, who have I talked to along those lines? So I think most of those discussions have already occurred, and I think everybody probably feels good about it. Now, if we were talking about somebody in the 6th round, in the same scenario, two quarterbacks back-to-back, which one do we want? Now, there might be debate still going on about that.
Floyd, one of my favorite draft stories that you have is the night where you picked Javon Kearse, and you had a discussion over the phone with Tampa Bay. And for anyone listening out there, how did that all play out for you to end up getting Javon Kearse back in the 99 draft?
Well, it was interesting because, I mean, I love Javon. I mean, I just, the guy, you know, I was infatuated with him. I mean, he was special. And I wasn't for sure where we were going to play him, but I didn't care. I thought he was that good. So we're watching and praying that somehow he'd drop to us. And we said, nah, it's really not going to happen. So we were prepared to draft somebody else. Anyway, you start watching the draft board, and he keeps dropping, and he keeps dropping, and and finally, I want to say we were picking like at 16, and Tampa Bay was picking at 15. And when it got to their pick, I said, I can't resist. I said, I am not going to risk losing this guy over one pick. I said, I'm going to trade up with Tampa, get that spot, and we're taking Javon. So I called up Tampa, and Rich McKay was the GM at Tampa, and Richie says, what's up? I said, I want to trade with you. He said, well, you're up next. And I said, I know, but I know who I want. He said, well, I'm going to take a defensive lineman. And my heart just sank. And I said, who are you going to take? And he says, we're going to take, I think it was Booger McFarland. I said, oh, okay, bye. And I was gone.
Oh, that's fantastic. Floyd Reese with us, the GM. Floyd, before we let you go, we're wrapping up our Nashville sports bracket today. And the finals, the championship game, it's Steve McNair versus Pecorine. And Ryan and I kind of gave our answers in the first segment, but when did you know that you had something special in your quarterback in McNair?
You know, once again, I'm not sure. I would like to tell people it was really, really intelligence and smarts and all that kind of stuff. I think it was probably just blind luck with me. I mean, I, for whatever reason, liked a kid right off the bat, and I thought, If you can get this guy and give him a chance to progress and really work the craft, he's got a chance to be special, special, because he was literally a one-man team. You know, we talk about, and I'm not comparing him to Burrow, but you talk about a guy like Burrow, and Burrow was, you know, he's got as good a receiving core as there is in the league, on the best team there is in the SEC, with an offensive line as good as any, a solid running back. I mean, they had everything. They were a great team. And Kerry Collins was at Penn State. And I can remember people talking about, well, you know, what would Steve be like at Penn State? And I said, the real question in my mind was, what would Kerry be like at Alcorn? Yeah. That's the question, because he had to carry the whole team. But we knew, I mean, I felt like he was something special right off the bat. I remember drafting him, and right after we drafted, a good friend of mine, Carl Peterson, who is a GM at Kansas City at the time, called up and he said, what a gutsy call. He goes, way to go. I'm really proud. I said, you mean it's not a lock? I said, I thought it was a lock, not a gutsy call. So that'll just go to show you.
Well, it turned out to work in your favor, Floyd. Hey, we appreciate it. We appreciate it as always. We will be listening starting at 2 o'clock, and good to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
Floyd Reese, the GM, long time for the Tennessee Titans here on 2 to 6 weekdays alongside Jared Stillman. Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, they handed out some money yesterday. We'll talk to him next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's the Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Elijah Campbell is back at the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Chase McKay, Brian Porth, we are live from our homes, and we bring in the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, Sean Henry. Sean, good morning. How are you?
You know what? I am doing well. I'm banging out an email right now to our entire staff for our theme of the day, which is baseball. Mm-hmm. So I'm explaining to them all why they should be a Yankee fan like the rest of
I am watching your Yankees right now, actually, from 2010. MLB Network has a game on against the Angels in honor of Jackie Robinson Day. So I am watching.
It's a pretty special day.
It is. It is. Let's start with that. I mean, you're a big baseball fan. I was going to bring that up to you before we get into business. I mean, that he changed the sport. He changed not only baseball, but he changed sports in general by breaking the color barrier. And I think it's so cool some 70 years later to still see a sport rally around him and honor him.
Well, not to one-up you, but I think he changed America.
Yeah.
You know, a great quote by Willie Mays is, he said, every time I look at my wallet, I think of Jackie Robinson. And then he overlaid that on other social norms, and what he did was incredible. And the grace that he showed, and let's face it, most of the world would not have been able to do what he did in taking the punishment he did and the abuse he did, but he did it to make sure that he was paving a road for other people. And just really an amazing, amazing man.
Speaking of paving the road and doing amazing things, your organization, the Nashville Predators, and Bridgestone Arena delivered $2.7 million in relief to those impacted by the tornadoes and everything going on with the coronavirus, COVID-19. And I remember sitting at the arena the last time I was there. The SEC tournament had been canceled at that point. You did a press conference to kind of go over everything. And one of the things you brought up was Give With Us and the initiatives that you guys were going to continue to do with so many unknowns with this outbreak. And you guys have been able to do that, and I think that's really cool.
Well, I appreciate that. The tee up, we're pretty fortunate. You know, we say it all the time. I know other markets, when you hear me say it, think, you know, it's hyperbole, but we really do have the best fans in sports, bar none. You can't argue it. It's not even a fun discussion for the other teams. But it's not just that we're the best fans. You know, you define best in a lot of different ways, but it's their generosity, it's their spirit, and their passion. You know, the volunteer states name that for a reason. And what we said, you know, we can take the passion of our fans and their spirit, combine it with the generosity of our players and our owners and our staff, and do some pretty good things. And I think that is best shown when things are tough. And, things are pretty dark right now. You know, we started this 40 days ago, 45 days ago or so, and we woke up to the tornado aftermath and the loss of life and you know, just so many challenges that caused. And then just a week or so later, we're sitting there at that press conference announcing we canceled the SEC tournament. We were taking a pause on our own season, and we realized that the victims of the tornado were going to be further impacted by what was coming with what was going to happen with some of the economic downturns by the COVID. And then, of course, that's caused its own problems on top of that. So we just thought it was important to keep doing what we were doing and then expanding upon it. And then someone kicked back and said, you know, we start looking at everything that we've tried to do and put together, from the grants, you know, to our event staff funds, to our tornado impact, to just feeding the front lines and celebrating the heroes that are pushing our city forward. it was amazing when you put that umbrella up, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's close to $3 million. And it was just a placeholder because there's going to be more and more and more. And, you know, as long as we can use our re-aired games and simulated games to draw attention to the sport and then draw attention to the need, we'd like to do so.
Sean Henry is with us, CEO of the Nashville Predators.
Oh, Ryan Porth is here. I did not know this. I thought he was arguing with, you know, your show producer about who the greatest catcher was as we were having a nice conversation as I waited for this call to start.
No, there is no debate over that, but that's neither
here
nor there.
You are correct, my friend. You are correct. We'll stop it there. Thank you for agreeing with me.
The Preds and Bridgestone Arena announcing yesterday that they are donating $2.7 million in relief to those impacted by both the tornadoes and COVID-19. And, Sean, I think each city in America has their own way of giving back and coming together. But there seems to be something special about when times get tough in Nashville about how this city rallies together. Would you agree?
Oh, there's no doubt. And I've said this, you know, time and time again. You know, I got here in the middle of the flood remediation, but, you know, months after it really started in earnest. And my first event, my first day, we had a press conference with Garth Brooks, who was announcing his concert run, charity run, you know, for those affected. And he laid out why he was doing them at Christmas time, you know, because the need was going to continue for a long time. And those really affected by that, you know, worked in the hospitality industry. And a lot of times around the holidays, that gets a little bleak. So I sat back and thought, wow, this is really amazing. And then you look back over who saved Nashville from the flood. It was Nashvillians. And it really painted a picture for me of what the volunteer state was when East Tennessee was going through those awful fires. Again, who picked up and went in and helped recover and rebuild? It was Tennesseans. And other tragedies around the country, when they happen, you know, normally other cities will kind of invade, if you will, and come in and help and participate. But our city is very, very unique in that. It really is amazing. It's inspiring. It's humbling. And we could all go on and on, but there's no doubt about it. It's a special place.
Sean, you've been in the organization for almost the entirety of Pecorine's career, and we're doing our Nashville sports bracket. It concludes today, Steve McNair versus Pecorine. And over your time of being in the front office with the Nashville Predators, you know, thinking back to your early days in the front office, when did you know that both on and off the ice that you had something special with Pecorine?
Well, on the ice, it was apparent even before I got here. You know, I became a starter the year or two before I got here, and, you know, he's just incredible. I mean, just an incredible player that, you know, when you look from afar, when I'd watch the Western Conference games back when I was in the Eastern Conference, you know, you always wanted to watch Nashville to see what he was going to do because he was just so much fun to watch. And then when you get here, you get to see, you know, every day and in practice and, you know, the way he prepares to go on the ice. And then you get to know him off the ice. And, you know, whatever people think of him on the ice, and it's incredible. You know, he's the greatest finish goalie ever, and, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. In my mind, there's no doubt. But his off-the-ice attributes and who he is and what he is so much greater than what he even does on the ice. And no matter who you ask, no one's ever been around a person like Pecorine. Not an athlete, a person. So many times people try to box everyone into one category and say, well, I've never seen an athlete do this much. I've never seen a person do so much. I mean, he does things that are so unheralded that no one knows about. He started the hospital virtual visits. Not because anyone asked him to, but he knew he couldn't go to the hospital to visit, you know, the kids that he likes to do on his own. So he did that. Now that's run through our locker room, and all the guys are doing it. He's just so unique and so special in how he treats people, and he's just fun to be around.
Sean Henry is with us. And Sean, as we continue to go through this time with the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, I've been sitting here in my house for about a month doing the show, you know, remotely. And one thing that has kind of crossed my mind a lot lately is I get on social media or I look at the technology that I'm using to be able to broadcast is just how lucky we are to have those tools at our disposal to be able to stay connected, albeit it's not face-to-face. There's something about being, you know, in the same room with somebody. But how have you guys been able to use that? Because I see the Preds Twitter account. I see Nash. I mean, you're interacting with fans socially, but using technology to stay connected.
Yeah, it really is amazing because if this were a few years ago, you know, I think the epidemic or pandemic could be over before we'd all know it because we're writing letters to each other. But, know, you fast forward to where we are now, and, you know, I'm on probably 5 Zoom calls a day. Half of those are internal, half of those are external. But it really is amazing. It's one thing to have a conference call. It's another to be able to connect when you're looking at people and you're presenting to people. You can see their expressions in what you're saying and what you're doing. And it just, it almost makes it as good as being in the same room as each other. But there are also things that I think we're learning from this that, you know, we're probably going to conduct future meetings differently. We're going to probably look at what we do in the office and what we can do from home a little bit differently, not just in our industry, but all industries. And it really is amazing. We're just so fortunate. I would have told you 2 months ago, if you said everyone was going to office from home at Bridgestone Arena, what would happen? And I'd say, well, we'll crash, we'll burn. And we're not ready for it, we're not prepared for it, not even thinking about it. And I don't know if we missed a beat. And, you know, one thing that we proclaimed as an organization is we're going to come out of this stronger than when we went into it by deepening relationships. And when I first said that, I meant externally. I didn't realize how closer we could work together by not working in the same office space. And, you know, we have groups of people getting to know each other a lot differently. And we're doing a lot of fun things. I mean, literally, right now I'm writing an email about baseball. We're asking everyone to tell us their favorite baseball memory. Every day there's something to share with the entire staff. And as goofy as that sounds, it connects 300 people together over what their favorite restaurant is, their favorite, you know, board activity or whatever it may be. And it is amazing. And, you know, we all complain about social media, or did, I think, maybe 2 months ago. Like, where is it going? It's invasive to me. It's too much. Thank goodness for it right now. I mean, it really has connected all of us, being distant, than I think we have been in many, many years.
Sean, how important is it for these leagues, these sports leagues, to have all sorts of different contingency plans at least discussed or thought out before, you know, our states and, you know, the country says, okay, we can now start playing sports again, but maybe without fans? How important is it for these leagues and, you know, your franchise specifically, to have all these different scenarios already thought out before it's time to make those decisions?
Well, I hope we have them all thought out before we have to make those decisions. But then you hit it on the head. I mean, there's every contingency in the world being thought about and planned right now, and that's why we spend so much time on Zoom calls together, you know, with the league, with each other, with different committees. And no matter what we see today as could develop, right, we have a plan for it, and I think that's a very positive thing. Now, although it might be something that we're not foreseeing today, you know, it might change everything again. But I said at our press conference back a month ago or so, it was so humbling to be part of the SEC decision and then what we're doing at our own league with the NHL, because we had a plan set in stone. I mean, it was set. This is what we're going to do. And an hour later, we change it and then change it and change it. And I love being part of organizations that are not so arrogant that you can't say, all right, we need to retoggle this and retoggle it. So I don't know where it'll end up. I do know one thing. You know, we're going to play this great game again. We're going to do so, and it's, you know, safe, you know, for everybody to do it. And that's a cool thing to be a part of. Now, there are frustrations with it because you have to keep planning and keep changing, and you play a lot of what-if scenarios and a lot of hypotheticals. And I hate hypotheticals because you're very rarely right. But this is one of those things that, as long as we have the right solution at the right time, we're going to be okay.
Sean, as we wrap this up, we talked about the money that has already been given, but I've heard you say time and time again that just because you make an announcement and you give a grant or something, the work is not done. So what are some other things that the organization is doing to help with not only the tornado relief, but everything going on with COVID-19 that we can look forward to down the pike?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many challenges caused right now, both by the tornado and COVID, but one of the biggest ones is the underserved communities and the shortage of food. I mean, we have food deserts in pockets of the city as it is. You know, as people await some of the assistance that they've applied for, whether it be unemployment or impact checks, there's a real need that's out there. And even today, right now, we're promoting opportunities to do a virtual fundraiser for Second Harvest. So just go to Pred Social accounts, and there's a fast way to click on through and support Second Harvest as they, you know, really help those in the greatest need in our community. Nashville Strong hats, T-shirts, sweatshirts are still for sale. You can, you know, just go to NashvilleLockerRoom.com to pick those up. All of our profits from that go right to our funds to continue to raise things. We're trying to schedule another blood drive in the coming weeks. You know, the last one we just had replaced the one we're going to have in our arena, and somehow we ended up almost tripling the amount of donors and the impact that it had. So it's an ongoing virtually every day. I mean, one of the cornerstones of our, we have a daily Zoom call with about 20, 25 people, and then they break that down in their individual departments. But one of them is our community relations. What are we doing today? What are we doing this week? What are we doing next week? How are we tracking to what we wanted to do last week? So it's really the cornerstone of what we're doing. What's really nice is we have so many partners on the restaurant front that are keeping their doors open to keep their employees working. And a lot of people don't realize that. And it's important for us, I think, to bring volume to what they're doing, but then also use those as we, you know, eat with us and feed the front lines and thank our first responders, thank the hospital workers, and have some fun with that as well. So a lot of our initiatives build on top of each other to help one feed into the other, if you will.
Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. Hey, it's good to talk to you, my friend. Stay safe. Hope you and the family are well, and we'll talk soon.
Same to you guys. Thanks for having me. Ryan, do you want me to copy you on this email to inspire you to switch allegiances to a real team?
Don't bother. I am a fan of a real team, and that's the Cincinnati Reds, the city in which baseball was born.
Ooh.
That's what you claim, and St. Louis claims, and Boston claims, and Toronto claims.
Atlanta claims.
There's
to
a
be
town
the
in New York called Cooperstown where it actually was born.
Yeah. There you go.
That's true.
Maybe professional baseball.
Appreciate you both.
Thanks, Sean.
Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. I don't think I'll be able to say president correctly. I'll just keep saying president.
There you go.
But Sean Henry joining us. When we come back, we will wrap things up with our bracket. It is the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game. Or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Elijah Campbell, hanging out at our Wholesale Link studio powered by RumbleOn.com. So, Ryan, it all comes down to this. I would assume we're going to have one shining moment, play it about 9:01 later tonight after the final buzzer, but Steve McNair versus Pecorine for the championship in our Nashville sports bracket.
And Pecorine now holds the lead in the voting between he and Steve McNair. I think it's going to go back and forth most of the day between those two. I think there's a lot of people who just assumed that Steve McNair would win this because of, we've always thought of Steve McNair as the guy in Nashville, but Pecorine here in the last, I would say 5 years has elevated himself to a very similar level. And right now, through just under an hour of voting, Pecorine leads the vote 60-40%.
Yep, I see that now. And I think it's going to shift back and forth as the day goes on, like you were saying. I just cast my vote. I'm not going to reveal who I voted for, but I just submitted it, and I'm going to tell you, it's a tough call. It is such a tough call.
This is like a parent trying to answer the question of which one of your children is your favorite.
Right. You can't do it because they both mean so much, and not only for their teams. I mean, we know Steve McNair, the player, Pecorine, the player. What they have meant for their teams, but it's the off the field, off the ice stuff. Pecorine helped co-found the 365 Fund that he's a part of, alongside Shea Weber with the Predators organization. Steve McNair and all the work that he did in the community here in Nashville, and then later on when he went to Baltimore, and just the type of people that they are, and that's what makes it even harder. Is you have to factor that part in.
Yeah, and, when you look at on the field, Steve McNair, franchise quarterback, Pecorine, franchise goaltender, both co-faces of the franchise. We could probably say in their franchise's history here in Nashville, they are the faces of each franchise. McNair won NFL co-MVP. Pecorine won the Vezina Trophy. They both led their teams to the final round or the final game in the postseason, the Super Bowl and the Stanley Cup final. Both came up just a little bit short. I could see both having a statue outside of their arena or stadium, years down the road. I mean, this is it's funny how similar both of these individuals are in terms of the accolades that they have done on the field or on the ice.
It is funny to bring up the statue conversation, because that's one thing that Bridgestone Arena doesn't have. Nissan Stadium, they don't have that. Now, they have the banner. Like, Nissan Stadium has the two banners of Steve McNair and Eddie George hanging outside. So they have that, but they don't have actual statues. And I do wonder if that's something that has been discussed of, you know, when it's time. I think with Pecorino, you wait until he retires. And then I think the question is, who are the other statues? David Poile, probably. I mean, I would say there's no doubt there that he gets one at some point in time. But do you consider Shea Weber? Do you consider Barry Trotz? Do you consider, I mean, do you consider Peter Laviolette?
So when it comes to a statue, I mean, that is legendary status.
Right.
Like, you don't just build a statue. Like, it's one thing to get your jersey retired or your number retired. It's another thing to get a piece of brass iron built outside of the arena or the stadium, and it's going to be there forever. You know,
forever.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite baseball movie, Sandlot. Could I see Poile getting one too? Yes, I could.
I think all-time
GM. But man, when you include other names in that, like, you go to these other arenas and you walk around the arenas that have been there a long time with franchises that have a lot more history and time than the Titans or the Predators, those statues aren't just handed out like candy. I mean, it is something significant when a statue is made. So I would say, you know, for the Titans right now, it would be Steve and Eddie, and that's it. And for the Preds, I would probably say Pecorino and David Poile, and that's it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I could possibly make a case for Roman Josi at some point in time. It's obviously incomplete right now. You could make a case for some others with the Titans, probably Jeff Fisher, but those two, Steve and Eddie and then Pekka and Poile, to me, are the locks. I mean, those are the ones.
For Josi to get there, I think he's got to win maybe multiple Norris trophies and maybe even a Stanley Cup, because there's something special, not to discount Roman Josi, we all love him, but the fact that Pecorino was like the first guy who stuck here the entire time in that organization's history and was at an elite level for a long time within his career. Like, Roman Josi has been fantastic in his career so far, but I think he's got to find another level or stay at this level for a long time for him to get into the statue category.
Yeah, you're right there. Go to our Twitter page at 1025 The Game until 9 o'clock tonight. You can vote for the Nashville sports bracket determining the best athlete in the last 30 years in Nashville. Again, today is the final round, the championship round, so go to at 1025 The Game on Twitter. That is going to do it for another edition of The Rundown. Ryan, have a great day.
You too.
We will talk to you starting at 9 a.m. tomorrow on ESPN 1025 The Game.